creepiness for our listeners.
Yep, October 26th to the 30th, we'll be celebrating our favorite holiday with you, our favorite people.
Each day, we'll have a brand new mini episode of something creepy and crawly for you to enjoy.
So stop in and listen every day, then tweet us for a chance at some killer kudzu giveaways. Cut that out. It's undignified.
Okay. Hey, y'all. Thanks for coming back to listen to another Friday episode of Kudzu Killers, Homicide, and Sweet Tea.
I'm Lark, and that other voice you hear is Kim. For the next 15 minutes or so, we hope to bring y'all an interesting tidbit about crime, or a story we feel you'll like but just doesn't have enough information available for a full episode.
We hope you enjoy these tasty morsels of good old Southern Gothic mayhem.
So sit back, grab your glass of iced tea, relax, and enjoy yourself. So now, on with the show.
Had a good weekend, and now back to the groove.
Yeah, the groove. We love the groove.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. This groove is a lot of fun. The regular job, well, it's a lot of fun too, but this, you know,
well,
this is fun.
Because we're groovy chicks like that.
Okay. So, you want to hear what we're talking about today?
Totally. What's
this
the
story? Our Forensic Friday, and I'm doing a little bit of forensics with a big story.
Awesome.
And hopefully you guys enjoy it. We shall see. Here we go, though.
Here we go.
So most of you, if you know anything about gangsters at all, have heard about Machine Gun Kelly. You heard about Machine Gun Kelly? You know who he is?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
George Kelly was his real name, and he was a gangster who did pretty much what all gangsters did during Prohibition. He was a bootlegger and lived on petty crime.
Of course.
He did a bank robbery here and there, but, you know, just the usual gangster stuff.
Mm-hmm.
He was born on July 18th, 1895, in Memphis, Tennessee. Woo-hoo! As George Kelly Barnes.
Mm-hmm.
Some sources say in 1897, some say in 1900, but the fairly consistent year is 1895, so we're going to go with that.
Okay.
Now, George didn't graduate from high school, but his mama got him into classes at Mississippi A&M College anyway.
I love it.
That's now Mississippi State University.
Love it.
And he was not a good student at all. Mm. He went for 1.5 semesters and earned mostly C's and D's, and he earned like something like 31 demerits in his first semester, and he already had 23 just a few weeks into the second semester when he dropped out.
I can't even imagine. I was going to say that he kept going.
I'm assuming that he dropped out and they didn't just kick him out, but, you know.
Probably. I can't imagine that he had the fortitude to keep going.
After he dropped out, his father disowned him.
Mm.
But while he was at college, he met a girl by the name of Geneva Ramsey. So after he dropped out, he proposed to her and they were married and eventually had 2 sons together.
Hmm.
George went to work at her father's construction company and life was pretty good. But then Geneva's father died. And I guess the work dried up or something like that. And he turned back to bootlegging, which he had done when he was a teenager a little bit.
A natural.
After a few years of him getting arrested and getting in trouble with the law and all of that stuff, she was tired of it. She didn't like his new friends in low places, so she filed for divorce in 1924. Now, by all accounts that I've read, George was a really nice guy, relatively speaking. He wasn't violent. He was, in fact, good-natured and laid back. He never shot anyone or killed anyone throughout his whole criminal career. So I guess as gangsters go, you could say he wasn't one of those ultra-violent ones who loved good shootout.
Wasn't he supposed to be, like, handsome and stuff?
I don't know if he was the handsome one or not, but he was the nice one.
Okay, gotcha.
Now, he was caught selling illegal liquor in 1927 and spent a few months in jail in New Mexico. And then in early 1928, he was arrested again for selling booze on an Indian reservation and spent a couple of years in Leavenworth.
Oh, my gosh. Hard times.
But he was released early for good behavior.
Aw.
So, you know, he wasn't exactly living up to the gangster image. He was actually a decent guy.
Just trying to make a living.
Now, that all started to change when he got out of Leavenworth and he married his girlfriend named Catherine Thorne. Because Catherine was a bit of a bad girl. She was a lifelong criminal.
Uh-oh.
And she had friends in even lower places than George did. She's the one who gave him the nickname of Machine Gun. In fact, she bought him his first machine gun and insisted he go out and practice, even though he didn't like guns that much and he was really wasn't interested.
He wasn't interested
in those guns, but, you know, she was pushing him to make something of himself.
Oh, there you go. That's right. Get out there and make something.
Yeah, and this girl was a marketing genius, I tell you.
I love it.
She was marketing him to everybody as the baddest of the bad and a guy that would shoot you as soon as look at you. And that was, you know, kind of the completely opposite of George, right?
Love it.
The newspapers liked it. And by the time George reconnected with some of his fellow inmates from Leavenworth, most of them were into bank robberies. And that name, Machine Gun Kelly, stuck. Mm-hmm. And now, rather than bootlegging, George was robbing banks, too. He robbed banks all over the place.
Oh, my.
Iowa, Minnesota, Texas, Washington.
Wow.
He never met a bank he didn't like to rob. And while he was doing this, Catherine's out there giving away bullets he shot during target practice or during bank robberies to his fans.
Souvenirs.
Because, you know, back then in the 30s, the ones robbing the banks were, you know, Robin Hood to a lot of the poor people back then during the Depression. So
That's true. They had fans.
They had fan
That's
clubs,
true.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
They were like the boy bands of today. K-pop.
Oh, my gosh.
So his reputation grew and grew and grew, you know.
I love it.
But then soon George added kidnapping to his list of things he did.
Oh, that's not good.
Catherine wanted her fella to be big time, so she pushed him into kidnapping for ransoms, something a few other gangsters had started to do.
Mm-hmm.
After a couple of attempts that didn't work out, George sat down with his wife and a friend named Albert Bates, and together they hatched what they felt was a foolproof plan to kidnap wealthy Oklahoma oil man Charles Urschel.
Famous last words, foolproof.
Yeah. Always. So on July 11th, 1933, they carried out their plan and rushed into the middle of a bridge game at the Urschels' home and kidnapped him and his friend, Walter Jarrett, leaving the wives behind at the house. They soon let Jarrett go because I guess they were trying to figure out which guy was Urschel. So after they figured it out, they let Jarrett go at the side of the road.
Oh, my gosh.
Demanded a ransom for Urschel of $200,000. Well, $200,000 in 1933 is the equivalent of $4 million today.
That's big money.
So, a pretty big chunk of change.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Charles Urschel was a wealthy oil man, and his new wife, who also happened to be his former sister-in-law, was even wealthier because her husband had died and left her his oil business. So, man,
holy
together
moly.
They were, you know.
Rolling.
And they were the 1%, definitely.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to kidnap somebody to hold for ransom, that was a good pick.
Good call.
The only problem was Urschel was sharp, like Ginsu knife sharp.
Oh, good.
So when they took him, he made note of every single detail he could.
Wow.
He was blindfolded part of the time, but he was still able to tell night from day.
Mm-hmm.
So he could kind of tell what direction they were traveling. And he could remember smells, and he remembered sounds along the way.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever seen the movie Sneakers with Robert Redford and Sidney Poitier and Dan Aykroyd, River Phoenix? It's kind of like an all-star cast.
What's the name of it again?
Sneakers, like the tennis shoe.
Oh, I was a million years ago, but I'm not placing what it's, yeah.
Well, if you remember, there's a scene in there where Robert Redford is kidnapped and stuck in the trunk of a car. And what he did was remember smells and sounds and a flock of birds that he heard going nearby that he thought was a cocktail party.
Wow. That's.
If you haven't seen that movie, give it a try because it's a really good movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's really
I cute. Like all those guys anyway.
But yeah, but that's exactly what Mr. Urschel did. He remembered all the sounds and all the smells And he did another thing. Mm-hmm. He knew about fingerprints.
Ooh, cool.
And how law enforcement used them.
Wow.
So he made sure he touched every single thing he could get to in that house that they had taken him to hold him for ransom.
Well, where did they take him? And that's an awesome thought to even think to do that, you know?
Yeah, he thought to do that. He just left his fingerprints everywhere. Well, I'll tell you in just a second.
Okay. Sorry.
So when the ransom was paid on July 30th, so he was with these guys for 2-3 weeks. Mr. Urschel was released because, remember, our George is really kind of a nice guy. He wouldn't have killed him. He's never even shot anybody, let alone killed somebody.
Aw.
So when Mr. Urschel got home and started talking with the FBI, because at this point in time was after the Lindbergh kidnapping. So now kidnapping was a federal offense and the FBI was in it up to their eyeballs.
Uh-oh.
And so they were investigating this. And by the time he got home, he was able to tell them everything. Everything. He told them tiny, minute details that helped them figure out where he might have been held.
Mm-hmm.
They were eventually able to figure out that he was being held in a town called Paradise, Texas.
Oh, my gosh.
Which is about 45 minutes or an hour from the Oklahoma border, right? And guess whose mama has a ranch in Paradise, Texas?
Oh.
Catherine Kelly.
Of course she does. Mm-hmm.
So on August 12th, the FBI agents raided the ranch and arrested Catherine's mother and her husband's son. But Catherine and George, as well as Albert Bates, the friend, were long gone. Now, Bates was arrested soon afterward in Denver, Colorado for some petty crime and was found to have cash with him from the kidnapping because the FBI had used serial numbers to pay the ransom.
Wow.
And then they arrested a few more there in Denver for money laundering for the gang and things like that. So there were some arrests done. So I'm sure George and Catherine were getting a little antsy. But it took them a while to find out where they were. But they got a tip, and they found him hiding in the home of a man by the name of J.C. Titchener back in Memphis.
Oh, my. That's a long haul.
Yeah. Well, they had just traveled all over the place. They were robbing banks in Washington State.
Just kept moving.
You know, they went everywhere.
Wow.
They had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
The FBI dispatched agents from Birmingham, Alabama to go there and arrest him. And on September 26, 1933, they raided that house, and Machine Gun Kelly, who didn't have his machine gun because he'd loaned it to the in-laws to rob banks,
oh my gosh,
was found cowering in a corner and hollering, "Don't shoot me, G-Man," which is where that name came from for the FBI, and it sort of stuck.
Wow. That's interesting.
The pair were actually flown back to Oklahoma. Now, in 1933, flying was a big deal still.
Yeah.
But they flew them back to Oklahoma City to stand trial.
Wow.
Now, everybody thought, well, surely they're going to plead guilty. All their friends have been arrested. They're all there probably crooning like birds. But they didn't. They pled not guilty. But they were convicted and sentenced along with all the others to life in prison.
But I bet you that flying in that plane was the highlight of their entire lives.
I tell you, it probably was.
Nobody ever, anybody else that they probably knew?
I don't know. I couldn't find anything that they had ever flown in a plane before, so who knows. But there were a few other people who had hidden money for them that were arrested and given a couple of years in prison and things like that. But in Alcatraz, where George eventually went.
Oh, my.
And I don't know if any of you have ever been to Alcatraz, but it's just a little bit isolated out in the middle of the ocean. And it's close enough that the inmates described being able to smell the chocolate from the Ghirardelli chocolate factory there.
Wow.
And they could hear parties going on at the nearby Angel Island, but they couldn't do anything about it. So that was more torture
than
being locked into a cell.
Exactly.
But poor George, while he was in Alcatraz, got the nickname of Pop Gun Kelly. You know what a pop gun is? Yeah. It's those little guns that we used to get as kids that popped out a cork at the end or something like that. He was prone to telling wild tales to the other guys, and none of them took him seriously, which is kind of sad because he's a nice guy. They also didn't take him seriously, partly because he was a model prisoner and never caused any kind of trouble while he was there.
But yet they slammed him into Alcatraz, which is like for the hardcore.
Well, that's where they put all the federal criminals, I guess, or all the gangster federal criminals, I'm not sure. But, you know, that's where Capone went for tax evasion.
Right.
So, but he was kind of your typical gangster and having people killed off here and there.
Right.
So. Now, this kidnapping of Urschel and the trials that came from it were historic in a couple of ways. I found this out. I had several sources for this, so I don't know if this was Wikipedia or if this was biography or which place that I found this, but it was the first federal criminal trial in the U.S., which had cameras allowed.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
It was the first kidnapping, like I said earlier, the first kidnapping trials after the passage of the Lindbergh Law, which made it a federal crime.
Mm-hmm.
It was the first major case solved by J. Edgar Hoover's FBI.
Wow.
And it was the first prosecution in which the defendants were transported by airplane.
Wow.
So they got a first with that.
Wow.
So, well, I'm sure they were so proud.
I'm sure she was. I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure Miss Thing was.
I'm sure that's exactly what she was looking for.
Yeah, she was looking for infamy, man. Oh, my God.
But there's another interesting little tidbit about this mm-hmm. story, and this shows the philanthropy of Mr. Urschel, Mr. Charles Urschel.
Mm-hmm.
They were well known for being philanthropists, and later after this happened, they relocated down to San Antonio, where they ran their oil companies together,
mm-hmm.
and they were founding trustees of San Antonio's Southwest Research Institute and the Southwest Foundation for Research and Education.
Interesting.
Urschel maintained for the rest of his life that Catherine was the head honcho. She was the brains behind the kidnapping, not George. She was the one that pushed George to do this because she wanted him to be famous. And he said that for the rest of his life, it wasn't George, it was Catherine.
Aw, that's kind of kind of him.
Yeah, he thought she was the one calling all the shots. And I guess he'd probably know since he was there listening, you know.
Right, right.
I'm sure he knew what was going on. But Mr. Urschel was a good guy, evidently, and he felt the need to help her daughter that she had.
Wow.
It wasn't Kelly's daughter, but it was her daughter. And anonymously, he paid for her college education of Catherine's daughter, Pauline.
Aw.
I'm guessing because he wanted to try to keep her from following in her mother's footsteps of crime, you know. But yeah, he paid for her college education.
That's a really awesome kind of guy.
Yeah, I thought he was really cool. And he died on the 26th of September, 1970, at the age of 80. Machine Gun Kelly died in Alcatraz in his 50s of a heart condition, heart failure. So
I can only imagine.
Anyway, that's my story for the day.
Wow.
It was the first in a lot of ways for the FBI. And I just thought Urschel was very clever to leave his fingerprints everywhere because he knew fingerprint technology was being used to catch people. Well, that was really kind of brilliant.
Well, not only that, but I mean, he was obviously interested in up and coming things and not just, you know, stuck in what he was doing with his oil. He was still, I guess, reading the newspaper, but I don't know, but he was informed, you know what I mean? That's so cool.
Right. Yeah.
I think that's awesome.
That's my story. I just thought it was really cool.
It was.
And I wanted to bring it and tell everybody.
I think it was really good. I mean, I like all those firsts and things because sometimes we forget. We become so just immune to, well, fingerprints, well, you know.
Yeah, but this was actually really critical. And his memory was critical. So I guess the moral of the story is if you ever get kidnapped,
think about it.
Listen.
Yeah.
And smell.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
I hope you guys enjoyed that story. And that's it for our Forensic Friday episode. And we'll see you come next Tuesday.
And remember, don't bury the bodies without us.
Bye, y'all.
Bye.